You're listening to Women Who Change Tech, the podcast that gives you access to women who are contributing, inspiring, trailblazing, and disrupting the business of technology. We believe that when women inspire other women, amazing things happen. I'm your host, Allison Wade.
And I am your host, Jessie Starenshoes, and we are connecting women around the world to share ideas that help us thrive and advance in our personal lives and in our careers.
Be sure to share this podcast with your friends, rate and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, and help us bring Women Who Change Tech into the lives of more professionals.
Hold on to your seats as we give you a dose of inspiration from some of the most talented and creative women who are shifting the face of technology.
Welcome to Women Who Change Tech. This is our first podcast, and we're so excited to be able to bring you some of the most amazing women in tech. I'm Allison Wade, president of Techwell and the founder of Women Who Test.
And I'm Jessie Starenshoes, the owner of The Improv Effect and the co-author of Control Shift, 50 Games for 50 Blanking Days Like Today.
Hey, Jessie, did you notice that our opening did not have any fabulous music?
Yes, it was so lame.
I know, right? I have a great idea. I know there are so many female engineers out there who are also incredible musicians. Why don't we ask our audience to submit some opening music?
Yes, we definitely need some intro music. The only sample music we have is not doing the job. Can you play them a couple of those great samples that we have? That would be if we're going to a baseball game.
Yes, and then there's...
I'm so funny, I don't even need a drum roll, but thank you.
And then there's this, which is just kind of tragically sad.
It is. It's like As the Women in Tech Turn Soap Opera Edition or something.
Definitely. And this is hip, right? Fast moving.
Oh, it's like 90s club music.
Yeah. It is not floating my boat.
No. Why don't we have them submit a sample of original music, and it can't be any longer than 3 minutes, and also it can't have any vocals.
That's fantastic. Yes, let's have them submit it to info@womenwhotest.com. We would love it if you would send us a sample of music so that our intro can be a whole lot better. That's info@womenwhotest.com. And now I'd like to welcome Tanya Catan. Tanya, you're a woman who creatively trespasses all the time. And that's just one of the many reasons I wanted you to be the first woman on Women Who Change Technology. Also because you've been a frequent speaker at the Women Who Test Day at the STAR conferences. Your talks have been overwhelmingly popular. People are blown away by your honesty, your humor, and your unique perspective on life and work. For those of you who'd like to experience Tanya in person, she will be at the Women Who Test Day at STAR West in California and STAR Canada in Toronto. And now, Tanya, I'm so excited for you to meet my co-host, Jessie. You both have incredible stage presence and have ties to comedy improv and theater, and you both are using those skills to go into companies and teach communication, creativity, and innovation. And as a result of that, you're changing tech. So Jessie, I'm introducing you to Tanya, and Tanya to Jessie. These are two of my favorite women right here.
Yay!
Woo-hoo. Nice so to meet you.
So
how's
nice
it going?
To meet you.
What are you wearing?
Something totally cute, of course.
Oh my gosh, me too. We have so much in common.
We do.
Oh, what a treat. Thanks for having me.
Well, great. I just wanted you guys to talk, if you could, about your background in improv and how you became involved in tech and what it is that both of you do, really, to help use improv and leverage that for teaching people better techniques for building software and working in the technology field.
You first, Tanya.
Oh, stop. Okay. So my background is more formal theater. As you can see, I am a thespian, and by thespian, I mean, you know, thespian. I learned all about acting, directing, and focused on writing plays. So writing plays, as you probably know from either sitting in an audience or writing yourself, or writing even software code, you're creating an entire world where none existed before. And you have fill it with interesting characters and dynamic scenes and enough to engage an audience of people to believe that this world exists. And that, my friends, is a challenge, which is Italian for challenge. And yeah, so my background is theater. And when thinking about going into technology, I used everything I could from theater because I had no background in technology. So that's, you know, imagination, thinking about tension between two people, problem solving, and actually playwriting and theater all about encountering obstacles and whether or not the lead character, you know, embraces the obstacle, overcomes it, or just sits down in a pile of their own making crying. And ultimately, you know, in a play, the character gets to the end of it and has learned something deeper, had a catharsis, and moved through that obstacle or those obstacles to find something new. And I think that that's also a challenge that exists within technology and making, you know, software and hardware, making technology. You're making it for human beings who will move through the process with you. They'll get frustrated at, you know, the UX or the UI. They'll give you some information and you'll make changes so that their journey can be one enlightenment, but their journey will be one where they feel like they've moved through something, an obstacle with you, and you can be the software or you personally, and have gone out on the other side and learned something new about themselves and about what they're capable of doing. So that's an initial connection or parallel I see.
How did you get into that? Like, what made you get into the tech world having not had that background? When did you connect into that world?
I love challenges, and I was not in the tech world at all, or even looking to be in the tech world. I was a curator of performing arts at a contemporary art museum, and got a phone call from a tech company that had seen me, you know, come to some of our curated shows at the museum, and they were interested in talking to me about being an evangelist. And yeah. And I literally thought that was a religious leader. And I thought, yes, I would like to be a religious leader. That's awesome. Really, yes, please. I didn't know that paid so well. And no, so I went in and had a meeting with the CEO of this company called Axosoft. And in fact, the CEO at the time, and she still is the CEO. I just don't work there anymore. Her name is LaDan Shojai. And she was an outsider inside the tech industry. So her background was actually, she has like a PhD in physical therapy and also like training as a pilot. And so when she brought me in, we had a conversation. I think she was interested in people who were from outside of the tech realm. And she saw that as rife with potential. So bringing somebody from the outside in with fresh ideas and new ways of thinking about technology. And so so she offered me a job and I happily accepted the challenge and then promptly realized, oh my gosh, what have I gotten myself into? What is SaaS? Is that what my sister is on weekend? Like, SaaS. I thought, you know, that's what my sister has when she's like, shut up, that's SaaS. But instead I learned it's software as a service, which confused me even further. So I was, I jumped into a world that I knew nothing about. And also it's B2B, you know, the software that they sell, which is business to business. I thought it was a charming hotel that people create in their own homes.
I remember being at a conference once, like when I was first kind of thrown into technology and they were talking about cucumbers and I was like, what on earth is going on? And Ruby. And I remember thinking, I don't know what any of these things are in terms of what they're talking about. So I was having a completely different like perception of whoever was presenting. I was like, okay, so the cucumber and SaaS and the Jason. And I was like, what is happening?
Yeah.
And the B2B where they're serving scones and cream.
Yeah. I mean, I thought, you know, AI was like how people in England ask for more beer. They're like, hey, oh, I'd like another pint. You know, there were so many. May I have another pint? Yeah. Oh, it was, yes, it was. And so for my brain and somebody coming from theater, that's really up for challenges. I mean, theater is a live form. Even if you memorize the play and you spent months rehearsing, the minute you get on stage, sure enough, somebody in the front row, like their phone goes off or a baby's crying. And our job as theater practitioner is to run in real time and real life to what's going on around us. It's not to ignore it. It's to know that we've created a solid and vibrant world and we can respond to things happening in that world.
And that is so what the Agile software development process is about, which is kind of the world that you went into, right, Tanya?
Yeah, totally. Yes. Agile made perfect sense to me. Once I understood that was the way in which the company I worked for was making software, it's completely paralleled the playwriting and theater making process, which is to say that as a playwright, you know, I wrote plays, right? And then we had readings of the plays. We invited actors in and they read them and they gave feedback. And some of that feedback was completely organic, like they'd laugh at something. And then as a playwright, I'd be like, huh, that wasn't a joke. Okay, make a note, you know. And so they would offer feedback organically and then literally give feedback on, well, the character didn't feel like it was really dimensional enough for me to say those lines. And then you open it up to an audience and they give you feedback and the writer continues to make notes And when the play reaches its final stage so that it does go in front of an audience, you've worked with a lighting designer who has input, a director, all these people give information to the playwright, to the actor, and we make changes or iterate. And that's what, you know, agile software development is all about, iteration and beta testing and receiving feedback and making it more user-friendly, whatever the software may be. And it's dynamic. And so it's not about who's the most important part, the most important person in the process. It's not about that at all. It's completely collaborative. And in fact, if you're making the most beautiful moving theater or software or hardware or technology, then all of the parts fall away. And the user or audience member is left in a state of pure bliss, right? That's when you know. Yeah. So to me, both of those forms are completely collaborative.
I felt the same way when I was introduced into technology and then shortly after that, introduced to the world of Agile. And the same thing, when I learned the philosophies and the methodology, it seemed almost exactly like improvisation. Same thing, you know, I was like, wait, this is nothing new. This is exactly the world that I've been trained in. So it felt very familiar. So I can totally understand where you're coming from in that collaborative world where everybody has input so that it can be simple and intuitive for the end user.
Absolutely.
So Tanya, when you were at AxoSoft, and this is kind of actually how I met you, you created this really amazing thing and a campaign. And so can you just tell us about that campaign and the impact that it's had on you and on women in technology?
Sure. When I started working at AxoSoft, the company as an entity, again, Laudan, an outsider on the inside, brings in me, another outsider, you know, to kind of sort through what agile methodology is and how do we go into the world and talk about the product that they offer. And in that mix early on, probably 3 months into my job there, we were invited to be a sponsor of Girls in Technology. They were having an inaugural event in Arizona. And Girls in Tech, if you don't know, or if you do know, they're a global organization. They have chapters all around the world. And they provide resources, education, information for more women to go into the tech field and have the resources to feel confident doing that. And so as we were invited to sponsor, Laudan spoke with Sarah Breeding, my colleague at the time, and myself about coming up with an idea to address this, what we saw as an issue of women in the tech field, which is to say that the pipeline was not clear for inviting women into that field. And the the actual, you know, facts and statistics showed that women were qualified. And somehow there was a gap in between them being in the field and having the qualification. So basically she's like, you know, we're going to have a table there. Tanya, you're going to give a talk and come up with something. And so like any good creative, right, we sort of, Sarah and I brainstormed and came up with nothing. And yeah, I mean, isn't it the creative process? You know, you're given like a clear directive and then you go blank, right? Or it's the fear of the blank page. You know, blank page, blank computer screen, you know, the blank canvas, and then we have to make a mark. That's terrifying and exciting and all the things in between. And so we were more in the terrified realm. And then, you know, I went for a little walk and started thinking about women in technology. And then I realized, oh, well, this isn't a unique issue for women in the tech space. This is women in lots of occupations, right? Where oftentimes, as women, we're not seen or heard or celebrated for the superheroes we are, right? And in thinking about that, I started thinking about symbols. And this is something I'm sure, Jesse, you know, from improv and from theater. But we think and we make in terms of, you know, connecting with large audiences, we try to show symbols or metaphors because there are universal truths, but not everybody's had the same exact experience. So I thought, okay, symbols, what's easily recognizable to men, to women, to everyone in between that represents women. And so that's when on this little walk, I started thinking about, okay, the women's symbol and this, and I started making little drawings and sketches. And then I thought, the bathroom lady, she is everywhere where we all know her iconic triangular dress. And men know her, women know her, across ponds and seas and oceans and cultures, we all know this symbol. And so that's what I had was a symbol. And then I continued to kind of incubate on it and came up very like short, you know, like, okay, the bathroom lady, now what? Okay, I think I have to go to the bathroom. that's all I got. And this is where, you know, going back to the idea of collaborating, right? All the parts kind of converging, everybody utilizing their you know, creative capital to contribute to a larger idea. So I brought after trying to come up with an idea, I brought the bathroom lady to Sarah and I said, hey, Sarah,
did you actually take it off the wall and bring it?
No, I drew my own little janky version. Like, my little
disappointing.
Whoa, tiger. I feel like I'm talented in other areas. It's just that in drawing, I'm not.
You just can't rip signs off the wall. Come on, step it up.
Okay. Will you be my coach for this call?
Anytime. You're welcome.
So yeah, no, I drew a little sketch of the lady and Sarah and I kind of talked about her and all this stuff. And then I was like, I don't know. And then for some weird reason, and you know, everybody thinks that like, you know, we all have like, there's that moment where we have the big idea. And I think it's really just years of moments and of learning that go into the big idea. So I'm like, you know what? I think I need to print that lady out. I'll print her out. I'm not going to rip her off the bathroom wall. I'm just going to print her out like a civilized human being.
You're so civilized.
Paycheck that comes twice a week. Okay. I was doing my job. I printed her out. And then I'm like, I think that she is wearing a cape. I can't explain why. However, it was a triangle of her dress that to me was like, that's a triangle I've seen before on human bodies. And I think it could be a dress. It could be a cape. Maybe she's wearing a cape. And so with that kind of, you know, spontaneous, like, I don't know. Let me, you know, talk about experimentations. And I think that's, you know, with an agile way of developing software and with a creative way of developing plays, we experiment a lot. And so I just experimented. I just like drew on her. And really with just a couple of strokes of a pencil, I realized, oh my gosh, she is wearing a cape. This is so freaky. And if it freaked me out that it was there this whole time and I just hadn't seen it, then I thought, oh, this is pretty interesting. So I showed her to Sarah, who excitedly, it was never a dress. And I'm like, oh my gosh. And so from that moment on, we showed this idea to Laudan, and she said, "Whoa, this is really cool. Okay, let's see where this goes." And that was the inception of the idea.
So Tanya, that's kind of how I met you, was through the Never Address campaign. And one of the things I love about this story is that I'd seen this symbol. It was Never Address, and it just like went rampant. It was like, what were the number of hits that you got when you created this site for It Was Never Address?
Within the first 24 hours, there were over 20 million organic impressions.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it is amazing. Yeah, because our intention wasn't like, we want to create a viral campaign, right? Mm-hmm. We want to create a movement. It wasn't our intention. Our intention was to visually and an idea of women being seen, heard, and celebrated for superheroes.
I think that's what really rings true to people about this whole concept. And I actually wore that t-shirt through an airport after I got one from you. And I can't remember ever. I had women of all ages stopping me through the airport, like going, "Oh my God, where did you get that shirt? That's the most fantastic thing I've ever seen." Just being able to see a woman in a different light, seeing a common symbol that we see every day, and then you can't unsee it once you've seen this person with a cape on and being celebrated for the superheroes that women are. And people just love that concept. It's just amazing. After I saw that image, I was thinking, oh my God, I have to get in contact with these people. I need to find a way. Like, you know, I didn't know it was a big PR firm. I didn't know who they were. I was like, how am I going to contact these people? Anyway, I went to one of our conferences in Las Vegas, and with this idea in my head, that I'm going to find out where these people are. I'm going to contact them. Anyway, I'm in a general session and I'm watching a keynote speaker, and I take a picture of that person's slide and I tweeted out something about it. And then I needed to go to the bathroom because I had bathroom lady on the mind. And I'm walking to the bathroom. And as I'm walking to the bathroom, I see this life-size person, this Never Address. And I'm like, holy cannoli, that's the image I've been looking for. Why is it at my conference? And why is it outside my bathroom? And then I see Axosoft down the bottom. And I'm like, wait a minute, they're one of our exhibitors. Axosoft is related to this. So I go back to the general session and I've got a reply back from a woman who liked my tweet. And I look at this tweet and I'm like, oh, somebody liked that tweet. And she made a comment. And then we friended each other back and forth on Twitter. And then I get a direct message from her and she said, I see your profile says that you like Pure Barre. I'm a Pure Barre junkie. Are you here at this conference? I'm like, yeah, I'm at the back of the room. We should meet up. And then I click on her profile and I see that it's Laudan and she's the CEO of Axosoft, and Axosoft created through you, Tanya, It Was Never Addressed. And I was like, holy cannoli, what are the odds? So that's how you became one of the first speakers at Women Who Test.
I'm so glad about that. And that's, you know, Laudan is such a scrappy go-getter, excited to connect with other humans person. And that, you know, that kind of spirit is what brought me to work there initially. And also to be somebody who's new in their position as a CEO of a SaaS B2B, you know, project management software for software developers. Can you get
that's
more
a
specific?
Number.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And yet she's expansive enough to say, hey, you're creative and have good ideas. Let's see what you can do. That was really magical, I have to say. Yeah. And it was great too, because like I think about there's something I've been writing about and thinking about leaving a creative legacy at a company that you work with mm-hmm. or for, you know, I mean, there's so many times I've just left like dirty dishes in the shared sink or an emptridge, or, you know, like I didn't fill up the paper, peace out, you know,
and
become, you know, grown up and also learned how valuable my time is when I make a choice to work for and with a company. You know, there are times when it's time to leave. It makes perfect sense. But what do I want to leave? Do I want to leave people and processes in better shape than when I got there? The answer is yes. And so to me, It Was Never Addressed is this creative legacy that is left behind. It's better than dirty dishes, I'll tell you that much. Yep. But I mean, you know, it's something that we can all do. We all have that choice.
Yeah.
And so it was such a magical time. And lots of companies that I worked for, you know, before Axosoft, I chose to leave something better than when it was. And that just feels awesome. And also it opens the door to more expansive opportunities. I mean, here we share this thing. It's like we gave birth to It Was Never a Dress, and that we co-parent for the rest of our lives. How amazing.
That's so totally cool. Leaving a creative legacy, like that's just a great thing to think about. I think so many times in our lives, we separate our work from our personal life, and just I'm really inspired now. I'm going to go write and think about what my creative legacy is that I'm going to leave behind.
Yeah. I think it's something to encourage our listeners to think about too. You know, what is their creative legacy when they're, you know, doing the current work that they're doing? What will they be known for? What will people be talking about? And how did they have, you know, a part in that? It's really cool.
And I think that's something we do at, and I'm going to talk about Women Who Test Day again, but because this is the connection that Tanya and I have, that's something we do really strongly at that day, is we integrate the personal and the work life together. And we're not just talking about testing and testing skills. You know, throughout the week, we have lots of people talking about self-development and the skills you need and the things that you need to go forth in your job and do a great job. But there's this other whole side of you, the humanness that goes along with doing that job. And what are you doing to nurture and grow that other part of yourself? So do you want to tell us about your experience at being at Women Who Test? I'd love you just to chat about that for a few seconds if you could.
Oh, Women Who Test, # most awesome Women Who Test conference ever. I just, in that moment, I was like, oh, there's so many good conferences. Okay, here's what I love the best about Women Who Test, and every conference can challenge me on this. It's souped. It is meant people. Human beings gather in spaces that have round tables, okay, which already says something about the vibe of the conference. And also, Women Who Test is competing with all these other like breakout sessions and like a million of them. And so the women and men who choose to do the Women Who Test track are making like they're choosing against like 100 things. And they're like, oh, we choose this. This is the best thing ever. And okay, so Allison sets it up. Is it okay if I brag about you, Allison?
Yes, go right ahead. Feel free.
First of all, her accent is amazing. I tried to do Australian. It's not going to work ever.
She did.
Allison speaks to the people who show up like we're human beings. She sees us. She sets it up like a dialogue. And, you know, back to my theater training, she doesn't like monologue or soliloquy at us. She doesn't talk at us like so many people who are in charge of conferences. They stand up, they talk like we're not even there. She engages us in a conversation. And so, and then after, oh my gosh. So she has women from around the world speaking about everything from how to brand yourself as a human being, as well as a professional human being. She has people talking about, oh my God, Stacey, sorry. I totally, you know, Stacey Kirk.
Stacey Kirk, yeah.
She's in my book. I had to.
I love Stacey Kirk.
She said the most brilliant thing. I don't even know. It was. Oh my God! This is where writing a book is so complicated for the brain because there's so many things. I don't know what. Women Who Test is the most empowering conference for women and men, and if you're not going to it, you are missing out on a part of your life that you will never be able to get back.
I love it. There are so many deep conversations that go on at that day. And one of them is in your TED Talk. Yes, Tanya's done a TED Talk. She's really, really cool. You talk about suspending disbelief. And what if women suddenly were 50% of the workforce and they were paid equally and we were teaching young women to code and how would we suspend this disbelief and how would that affect the tech world and us building better products and, you know, both men and women working together? What do you think about that?
Well, suspension of disbelief is a core principle for being a theater person, or being just a creative spirit in the world. And the idea behind it is that when we go to a theater or a conference, when we're sitting together in a space, we agree to let go of all of our assumptions and perceptions about the world around us. And we take this gigantic poetic leap of faith into the unknown together. And that as a core principle for being in the world. You know, it's so funny. I was just having this conversation this morning about how we're in the United States, and I'd say globally, we tend to fall into binaries a lot, right? It's either this or that, either success or failure, either Republican or Democrat, either right or wrong. And with suspension of disbelief, it allows us to co-create together. It allows us to transcend binaries. It allows us to be freer together. And so this suspension of disbelief, I forgot what the question was. I was just going off on a tangent. But yeah, bring me back to reality.
No, you just, you know, I remember you talking about this at Women Who Test at the conference. And I just love this concept because it is so hard. And you're right, the world is so binary. And we're constantly, I mean, I know I am an offender of that as well. But I think it's because, you know, it's how you grow up structuring your life, right? You know, you grow up thinking one thing or the other, and it's so hard to untrain your brain. And I know, Jesse, you do a lot of this. You call it unlearning, right?
Mm-hmm. I think it's really interesting. I mean, I think that theme showed up in your It Was Never a Dress campaign, right? It's something you see one way for so long, and then what if it is something else? And then what does the world look like if you flip it on its head? Mm-hmm. You know, and that's such a key part of what you're doing.
Yeah.
Obviously. And how do you bring that into the companies that you're working with in general? Like, how do you get them to unsee or unlearn or suspend disbelief?
Well, in creative writing, you know, one thing that we say all the time, it's a mantra, is show, don't tell.
Yeah.
And people are like, oh, what does that mean? And so what I do is I show alternative ways for being in the workspace. So it's like everybody says, well, just use your imagination. Well, how can I like imagine or reimagine anything if I can't see what exists in the first place? So I get people to see what exists so that we can reimagine it. So for example, you know, I had a pretty regular job working at a museum. It was just straightforward. You curate programs, you bring people in, you create revenue streams, the end. And they hired me because I was an outsider and, you know, rule breaker. This seems to be, I mean, I know when to follow the rules and when to break them. See, I didn't steal the sign from the bathroom.
Yeah, I'm still disappointed a little bit inside, but
Don't I have to call my therapist after this podcast. Yeah. So unlearning, where were we going? Oh,
how you're bringing it into the company with show don't tell.
Yeah, I don't know where I was going.
Yeah, how do you do that? How do you bring it into the company?
You know, the goals will always be the same. The ways in which we get there can be vastly different and more creative than we're thinking about right now.
I love it. It reminds me actually of the exercise or game I was going to play with you, which is all about getting people to escape the norm. So it's called escape thinking. I don't know if you've ever done it, but it's kind of like what you described, you know, and the thought is that you take the attributes of something the way that they are now. And then what if you took one of those elements away? Then what is the world like? How does it change things just by eliminating it? So let's say if you, you know, write down all the attributes of a bowling alley. So like, just for fun, like you guys name some attributes of a bowling alley.
Beer.
Okay. What else?
Bowling balls.
Balls.
Of course, balls, it's like great. a women's podcast. Balls.
Right. Beer and balls. Great. What else?
Pretzels.
Lanes.
Okay. Lanes. Mm-hmm.
Shoes.
Yes. What else?
Video games.
Smelly feet.
Great. Okay. So then what you would do is you would write down all these attributes, right? And then you would look at one of those attributes that you named and you would cross it off or take it away. So what if you no longer had shoes for the bowling alley? Then what would that look like? What would the world become when you eliminated shoes? Then what? So what could you, what would we do if a bowling alley no longer had any shoes?
You would become the bowl, right? Because you would be in socks and then you would like slide down and you would become the bowl.
Great. Human bowling. Perfect. What else could we do? That's one very awesome idea. What else could we do?
Yeah, I love the sliding part. I think you slide into some sort of modern and or contemporary interpretive dance.
Yes, yes.
Like a Pina Bausch in a bowling
alley. Perfect, situation. Perfect. Yeah, so it becomes very upscale. I love it. Yeah,
yeah.
I love it.
Yeah, then you charge admission that you get your revenue goals.
Yeah, see? Bam. See? Bam. And there we just came up with a brand new company model. So, but that's...
too bad you didn't say that at Expedia.
Yeah, too bad. So, yeah, but it very much reflects what you're talking about, which is, you know, how can you get people to look at something or question something like as they go through their day and say, well, what if it were something else? Or how do we get rid of the assumption that it has to be this way in order to function? It's just like what you were saying.
Totally. I mean, that's it. You know, the artists of all genres are trained to basically ask what if questions. That's how we're trained. And this is the value that I found about, you know, being a sort of a trained artist in technology is that people, audiences, companies are excited and desire to ask what if questions. They just didn't know they could. And that's the most exciting part for me, you know, sort of sneaking creativity into companies and conferences and also, you know, working with public speakers. You know, I coach public speakers and it's like, well, what if instead of taking your fear of speaking in front of 10 people, 100 people, 1,000 people, what if instead of, you know, like avoiding it, you just leaned into it fully and committed to the fear? What if, like, and challenging people, right, instead of accepting, well, this is how it's always been. What if it was different? That's really key to how I work and how creatives are trained and how people really on a human level desire to work if they only, they could. And that's why I'm writing this book about all this stuff so that people know, regardless of whether or not you're in a, you fancy yourself or even consider yourself creative, that you always have access to more imagination, more what if questions to create something that didn't exist before.
And it's not about having to make this gigantic sweeping change either. It can be just one small thing can make such a difference too. I think people overwhelm themselves by saying, you know, but there's so much I would have to do in order to go there, you know, and sometimes it's just the tiniest tweak of something like, you know, tying your shoe with your left hand versus your right. And all of a sudden you see things in a different way.
Absolutely.
Tell us about your book.
Oh, yeah.
Sounds awesome.
It's called Creative Trespassing. And in true to form, we're going to be beta testing the subtitle. So I hope you'll be on our list of people who ran.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's a book about sneaking more creativity and imagination and personality into all the, like, the tasks at work that we deem mundane or sort of like ordinary, you know, that we're inhabiting a more like authentic life rather than, as you were talking about earlier, Allison, this idea, it's just a notion that, you know, we have to shift gears all the time. We're either working or we're living our life. What happens if we fuse the two? Yeah. And that's been my job. And it's a job that I fell into. Yeah. And then I realized after now speaking in front of literally like thousands and thousands of people, that people desire this connectivity to connect who they are with what they do every single day. And yeah.
Absolutely. And I think that the working world is moving more that way. Like, I have a teenage son and I know that's something he is trying to create his own school environment. And I think, you know, that the more we can think about doing things differently and trying to get out of the norms, I mean, so much of what the world is moving really fast and new technology is grasping us and new ideas are coming forward. And I think the ones that are winning really fast are where the human factor personality is injected, things that are making our lives better and making us more human, because I think that's what everybody truly Absolutely. Desires.
Yeah. And, you know, it's throughout the book, I have these things called productive disruptions. So they're doing exercises that A, disrupt your typical patterns, and B, they're called productive disruptions because they add to your productivity at work. Everybody thinks that, you know, because I'm like in a state of joy or happy or have a lot of energy that I'm not doing my work. It's just that I figured out a way to do both at the same time. And so, yeah. You know, I'm sharing these ideas in the book. I mean, I'll give you an example of one, because have you ever had this thing where you feel like, oh my gosh, my job title is not really aligned with what I do and who I am in the world. Like, it just seems like an afterthought or something I'm embarrassed by, or like, oh, my job title.
Yes.
Without any hesitation. Yes. So I too have suffered from that. And actually, I was thinking about when I got into technology, I was giving a talk at a CIO summit, and I had to look up what CIO was. Okay. Chief Information Officer. Who knew? Not me. And I was freaking out. I totally felt like super imposter. Okay. And I was there to speak about, you know, creative trespassing and empowering women and all these things. And the guy, the speaker before me, he was like literally speaking very cogently about AI, IA, AR, you know, AARP. I don't know. Like, he was just, I didn't know. ADD. And I was literally like in the back of the room. And wait, the harder proposition was the audience was like, mm-hmm, yep. Totally. And I'm like, I don't know what he's saying or they're responding to. I'm dying a slow, painful death here. And I'm about
H-E-L-P.
Yeah, right. S-O-S.
Please.
Yeah. Totally. T-M-I, U-T-I, B-M-W.
PMS.
Right. Exactly. I didn't know. I was totally freaking out. And then the MC of the event was like, okay, and now we'd like to welcome Tanya Catan. She's a CIO. And I'm like, hell to the no, I'm not a CIO. You know, I was literally and I'm like, what is he talking about? And there was like a long beat, which is a silence. And then he goes, CIO, Chief Inspiration Officer. And I'm like, whoa. Thank you.
Like, that's my new title.
Holy guacamole. Yeah. So at that moment, I realized that we are infinitely more than our job titles. And he actually gave me the freedom to imagine, like, well, what if I choose my own job title, what will it be? And so a productive disruption that I have in the book is an exercise where I say, you know, like, jot down all the stuff you love doing at work, the things that make you feel most alive and make everybody around you feel alive, then jot down the responsibilities of your position, and then come up with a title that merges your purpose with your responsibilities.
Love it.
It'd be fun to do it for each other too.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
Now we give each other titles based on what we see, you know, your strengths are. Sometimes we don't even see our own strengths.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. We're totally going to do that after this, Jesse. We're going to get together and do that.
You got to go Jessie, now.
Yeah. Jesse, we're like mind melding. I totally, that's what I like. I do comment on that, but it can be that's like the next level. It's team building exercise for sure.
Love it.
See, I knew you two would get along. Not only are you like my two shortest friends, you're also my two.
Wait, okay, you know what? Physically short, emotionally huge. I'm like,
absolutely.
I'm so tall emotionally right now. I'm not going to lie. I don't need to lie.
And you both run. I know, right? And Jewish. You're both Jewish. You're both short. What can I say?
That's not fair. Not
oh my gosh. All I can say
tall,
is
tall, sexy, and Australian. It's just not fair, okay?
No, I think Robin Allison's living the dream. Are you kidding?
Like, you got the short straws. We know it.
And you guys both run workshops in amazing countries too, which is the other cool thing about you two is you're both amazing. I actually had the privilege of doing one with Jesse in Scotland last year. And I know friends of mine that went with you to Italy. Like, you two people are seriously cool.
Wow. Okay. I just thought of something, Jesse. So what? As like, as an author, like when you have a book, as you know, as I've had a book before this book, you know, you can trade books with other authors, right? You could be like, I'm just, you know, want to trade books. Do you want to trade workshops?
Yes.
Are you kidding? Yeah. You heard it here first.
Yeah.
Oh my God, this is so cool.
Not recorded. We are going to do that.
Okay.
I'm so jealous. I'm so jealous. I want to go to the Black Forest this year, but I can't.
Well, you're not short enough, so sorry.
Yeah, there's some tunnels and like things. Yeah,
you can't make the height restriction.
We totally should, Tanya. We should be like, you're short enough to not ride the ride, then you can come with us.
Yes. Perfect. Yeah, yeah. We'll take.
See?
Yeah.
See how I taught you to look at the world a different way, right? There you go. Flipped it on its head right there.
Yeah. See, because we're short, we can look up all the time.
True.
That's right.
Yeah. True. It has its advantages sometimes. It
really
does.
Like in and stuff. Like on airplanes. Hello, every class is first class for me. I'm not gonna.
I know. I can like make my feet go up and down, and people are like, oh my gosh, my knees are in the back of there. I was like, what are you talking about?
I'm like, I'm stretching, I'm air running, I'm doing it all.
Pilates, yoga, whatever.
Oh my God, you guys, we could talk forever, but we were coming to the end of our time together. I love talking to you, Tanya, always. Thank you so much for coming on this podcast, being our first inaugural podcast. Is there anything else you want to tell us about work that you're doing that's out there that people could go to see you at? I know a lot of the work that you do is private inside of companies. Is there anything public that you're doing that you want to tell people about?
Yeah. Okay. That was such a pro move, Elsa. you can cut this, but you're like, oh my God, I've got to get in the last bit. I have to make sure to ask her. No, I'm kidding. Yes. Okay. So yes, I'm speaking and doing workshops for companies, and that's all private and NDA and exciting. And I've been working with clients privately to coach them with public speaking. And then I realized, oh, I can only take 6 clients a year, and more people are interested than 6 in working with me on public speaking. So I'm creating a DIY program that should launch next month. Yeah, a DIY program will launch soon on TanyaGatan.com for public speaking. You will learn how to speak like an oratory rock star.
So, my gosh, I had so much fun talking to Tanya Catan today, Jesse. That was just so awesome.
It really was. I'm so excited that I finally got to connect with her. You've been saying so many great things about her, and it was nice to be able to chat and laugh and almost laugh to the point of crying.
I agree. One of the things that I want our listeners to take away from this is all of the gems that are in these recordings from the amazing women we're talking to. And there were so many in this recording, but one of the things I really liked was when Tanya talked about creative legacy. I just thought that was such an awesome concept. And I am now going to go away and write what my creative legacy is. I thought that was just amazing.
Me too. It totally got my brain turning. How can I leave a creative legacy with everything that I do? I think that's a great thing for women to try in general.
Yeah, so it was so good. So what we're going to do is replay it for the listeners so they can hear just what Tanya had to say about creative legacy.
I think about there's something I've been writing about and thinking about leaving a creative legacy at a company that you work with or for. You know, I mean, there's so many times I've just left like dirty dishes in the shared sink or an emptridge, or, you know, like I didn't fill up the paper. Peace out. You know, and as I've become, grown up and also learned how valuable my time is when I make a choice to work for and with a company, you know, there are times when it's time to leave. It makes perfect sense. But what do I want to leave? Do I want to leave people and processes in better shape than when I got there? The answer is yes. And so to me, it was never addressed is this creative legacy that is left behind. It's better than dirty dishes, I'll tell you that much.
You've been listening to Women Who Change Tech, the podcast that connects you to extraordinary women for deep, inspiring conversations.